Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Words of the Wise podcast, hosted by me, Lexi Maynard. Our mission is to capture the words and wisdom of the world's elderly so that their story and legacy may last forever. Like what we're about? Then be sure to subscribe to receive instant updates on new episodes. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Words of the Wise podcast, or on Twitter at Words of W podcast as well. Joining us this week for Lucky Episode 13 is Joan Gruner. As she was a true joy to interview, I know you'll love listening to her story just as much. Here is Episode 13, Joan Gruner.
I'm Joan Gruner, and I'm 76 years old, and I live in a villa at Notre Dame Holy Cross, and it's lots of people that are my age and older, and not too much younger, and I like it a lot. I was born in November 1943.
Awesome. So you grew up in Middletown, New York, as an only child. What did the typical day in your childhood look like?
Let's see. We had a huge backyard and probably played out there. There was a boy who lived behind me, Bobby Stenrod, and he was my playmate, and we just did kid stuff together, dug holes and climbed walls and whatever. And then he had cousins that would come to visit, so that was fun because I was an only child, and it was really nice to have somebody to hang around with. So I was outdoors a lot, even in the winter, and, you know, playing. And if I was indoors, my mom and dad worked, and probably my grandma was home with me. I read a lot or looked at books. I really just spent a lot of time reading.
Mm-hmm. So you did live with your aunts and your grandparents, right?
Yes.
So what was that like?
It was a lot of people. My grandma always lived with us, my mother's mother. And her name was Mary Duffy Hingerty. And she was almost blind. She had very little sight. So she thought she was taking care of me, but I was taking care of her too. Yeah. And I do remember she taught me how to tell time. Because we were home together all day, and my parents worked, and Aunt Rita worked nights. My Aunt Kitty didn't come until I was a teenager. She didn't come to live with us. My grandfather lived with us, two grandfathers and one grandmother, and that was about it, I think.
And you come from an Irish heritage. Mm-hmm. So how did that come into play growing up with your grandparents?
I knew I was Irish.
Yes.
And I can remember when we got a TV, and it was like, it would be around St. Patrick's Day. So I was older. I was probably, you know, in late grade school. And I can remember the Ed Sullivan Show coming on. And he would always have a big to-do for St. Patrick's Day and the music. And I can hear my grandmother tapping her foot and singing. And it had to be Gaelic, you know, the words to whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember that so clearly. But being Irish was... something was just kind of taken for granted, in the sense that I knew there was family in Ireland still there, my mother's side. Mm-hmm. And my Aunt Rita was in charge of keeping in touch and sending packages to them, you know, because they didn't have a lot there.
Yeah.
And her name was Winnie, Cousin Winnie, and she had lived on a little farm that my grandfather had lived on. Would send shamrocks on St. Patrick's Day, little dried things in a bag. That was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And then she also would include Irish sweepstakes tickets for my Aunt Rita, because my Aunt Rita had a bitter gambler in her, and she always thought she'd win, for sure. That didn't happen. So anyway, but I mean, it was just an unspoken thing. And the other thing I remember about feeling Irish was, if there was somebody on TV or a book was written, or there's an article about somebody Irish or something done, I can hear my mom and my aunt say, oh, isn't she a nice Irish girl? You know, I mean, being Irish was special.
Uh-huh.
And so I just took that on. That's all.
Yeah. And your grandfather, I heard, was in the Spanish-American War. He was an officer for the Fighting Irish regime in New York, right?
He was part of the Fighting 69th Battalion. I think it was a battalion, yeah. And he was you know, probably a sergeant, I think. But he was a military guy. That was my father's father.
Okay.
Richard Murray. And they lived in New York City.
Do you have any stories from that he would speak about, your grandfather talking about his father?
No, I don't. I just remember, again, family, his sons that were alive. His daughter was passed away from tuberculosis, because that was a plague in New York City and many places. And so it was Dick and my father, Jack, and Frank. And when Grandpa lived with us, they always came to visit. brought him things. And I mean, they were devoted to him. They really were. Mm-hmm. So it was just nice to have him. But no, I don't remember talking to him a lot.
Okay.
He was sort of austere. He was very, I guess, military, his bearing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you were sent to boarding school. How old would you have been when you were sent to boarding school? And can you explain why?
I was in fourth grade, and it was September, and I went there because the polio epidemic was so huge in Middletown, New York, particularly Middletown for some reason. And my parents, I was the only child, and they really wanted me to be safe. And Mount St. Mary's was a boarding school, and it was in Newburgh, New York, which was probably maybe 45 minutes from home. Okay. So it wasn't really far away, but I did stay overnight. And there were kids there from all, girls from all over the world. It was really a very neat place. And let's see, I was trying to think what else about it. Yeah, I remember kids that I knew were in iron lungs. That's what they used at the time, just these huge tubes that would compress the chest and allow for, you know, inspiration. And it was very frightening. And I can remember one night waking up at home in bed, my legs were asleep, and I remember crying out. I was probably, I don't know, probably nine, and I thought I had polio. Oh. Because, you know, I just couldn't move my legs well. And I, you know, I remember my mother soothing me about that. So that was a scary memory.
Mm-hmm.
But and you know, it's indelible. But so anyway, I spent a year there, and it was really nice. It was really, and then I came back home.
Do you still talk to any of the friends that you made there?
No, I don't, but I remember their names. Isn't that something? Or the girl from France, I especially remember her. She was so sweet. She spoke French, and she spoke English with an accent. Georgette Posey Panko was her name.
Aww.
How about that?
That's such a cute name.
Yes. So I know if I ever ran across that name again, I know who she was.
Awesome.
No, it was really, it was good. It was a very good experience.
So growing up during that time, do you see any similarities between what's going on now with the coronavirus pandemic?
The same sense of panic, I think, that people felt, and fear. And I remember not, you know, kids didn't go to camp. Things like that, no gatherings and whatever, not to the extent that we know how to prepare for a virus now, but it was the same feeling about things, you know, not talking, being around strangers and whatever. So, yeah.
So what would you say is your favorite childhood memory?
Oh, gosh, let's see. You know, I think the memory that came to me first, so I'll tell you that, is just going to Mass with my Aunt Rita on Sunday morning, and we would be there first because she wanted a particular pew in the first parking place to get out when it was time. And after Mass, we would go to Reek's little corner store. It was on the corner of my street, California Avenue. And we'd get a pint of Neapolitan ice cream, Hershey's, and bring that home. And that was such a big deal. And you cut it in slices. No scooping. But then a pint isn't very big. They didn't sell gallons of the stuff then.
Oh.
But that just was, you know, something that was memorable because we did it all the time and it was comforting, you know.
What would you say is the greatest thing that your parents taught you?
What it meant to be loyal and honest and keep your word. And they didn't tell me that. I just observed it in the way they lived their life. And a work ethic. I mean, work to have a job was important, and to really do the best you could. That they talked about. And then I was the only one at dinner, just the three of us. So they would talk about their day at work at the hospital. My father kept books, and my mother was a nurse. And about people, and people who they didn't have good things to say about were usually dishonest. So, I mean, I got the picture about life and stuff, but I do remember that. But oh, and also my father always used to say, knowledge is power. All the time. And that's probably a statement that I definitely hung on to.
Did you have a job growing up?
No. My mother said I had my whole life to work, so she wouldn't let me have a job. That was that.
Oh, okay. No. Okay. I like that philosophy.
Short and sweet.
Yeah.
No. Not even babysitting. I didn't babysit until my father was more against that. When he passed away, I was 16 when he died. And then she relented and said I could babysit in the neighborhood. So I did do that sometimes.
Okay. So what did the typical Saturday night in high school look like for you?
Oh, date night. Yes. My husband, Charlie, and I would go to the movies or go to Walt's Diner to eat. Everybody went to Walt's Diner. And and you'd get something to eat and then come home and sit in the car in front of the house for at least a half an hour. And then, you know, and go in. But met him when I was a sophomore. He was a senior. And so we had that 1 year together in high school, and that was fun. Yeah. And we'd hang out by his locker. And let's see. And then he went in the Air Force because that was, you know, a way he knew he could get money for college. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he really felt patriotic. He wanted to serve his country, so it did both. Yeah. But it was a long 4 years.
Oh, yeah. So wait, how did you actually meet him?
Oh, the neighbors behind me, Ral, she was in Charlie's class, and she knew him really well. They were buddies. And let's see. So she decided that we'd be a good match. She had me come up before school one morning, and he picked us up to take to school in his car that had a hole in the floorboard. But that's another story. So anyway, that's how I met him, you know, through her.
Yeah.
And it lasted a long time. She was quite proud of herself.
Yeah, seriously. So so you were a sophomore. So like age-wise, how old were you?
Just turned 15. Yes, just turned 15. And Charlie had just turned 17.
Oh, my goodness. What was your first date then? Would you consider that your first date? Or when was the first time?
No, I think we went to an official movie.
Okay.
And it was probably not the best movie for two high school kids to go to, but it was Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And there were only two movie houses in town, so yeah. You went to one or the other, and I don't know why we picked that one, but that was interesting, yeah.
How did you know he was the one?
He made me laugh. It was fun being with him. Mm-hmm. It really was fun. And he was just honest and funny and enthusiastic about life. And he was Italian and German. And I got to meet all his Italian family, which I loved. I thought the best thing in the world would be Italian because they laughed and they fought and out in public. And they made good food. And, you know, it was just a great experience. So I don't know. I just felt like we fit.
Yeah.
And my mother and my Aunt Rita particularly loved Charlie, really loved him. Yeah. So, I mean, that helped a lot, too.
Oh, yeah. You said that he joined the Air Force. He would have been, what, 18, right?
He was just 17. He wouldn't 17. Be 18 until October.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what was it like being apart, and how did you communicate during that time?
We wrote letters.
Okay.
Regularly. I was going to take a picture of the box for you, but it's not an attractive box, so I didn't. Mm-hmm. He saved all mine. I didn't know he saved them, and I saved all his, and he didn't know I was saving his. So we have our whole history of 4 years out there in the garage, and I haven't read too many of them, just a few. And they're just simple things about what he did on the flight line. He was a jet mechanic and other things, you know, personal things. Love you and miss you and all that. But to make a phone call was a very big deal because it cost a lot of money to make a long-distance phone call. I mean, it was extra on the bill.
Oh, yeah.
But my mom said it was okay every now and then. She let me call.
So how often would you get a letter from him?
Oh, a couple of times a week.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
When did he finally return?
1964.
And is that when he proposed, or how did he propose to you?
He was home on leave.
Okay.
In December, and we were getting ready to go to Mass, midnight Mass, and he parked the car in front of something, I don't remember. It was an intersection near where he lived, and he got the ring out, and he said, "Would you marry me?" "Oh, yes, I really will." "Let's do it."
Aww.
Yeah. And then I just sat and stared at my ring all, you know, through Mass. It was, you know, because it sparkled nicely in the light. So
oh, yeah.
I do remember that.
Aww. When did you get married?
August 23rd, 1964.
Okay. And what was your wedding like?
It was hot. It was extremely hot in Middletown, New York. It was at Mount Carmel Church. And Father Forrester married us. He married my parents, and he baptized me, and then he officiated at our wedding, and then he baptized both of the boys when they were born.
Oh.
So we had a long history with him. And the wedding was nice. My best girlfriends were my maid of honor and two of my classmates from nursing. And Charlie just looked so happy. They wore white jackets, and that was popular,
mm-hmm.
you know, to wear white. The guys wore white tuxedo jacket. Yeah, we got married at Mount Carmel.
How many years were you married?
47.
Okay. So what would you say is the key to a successful marriage? You obviously were married for a really long time.
I guess being forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, the good things you take for granted, and most of them are good, and they're funny, And, you know, we moved a lot, so we depended on each other, you know, starting over, so, you know, five times, I think. Mm-hmm. And, but I would pick that word out, forgiveness and patience. And we would fight in the garage when we moved to, if we had to have an argument. My neighbor loved it. The boys wouldn't be hearing it, you know? And so I would tell my neighbors that, you know. So, but, you know, we did laugh a lot. And gosh, I don't know how much we really depended on each other. Mm-hmm. We really did for making friends. We shared that experience a lot because we both liked the same kind of people with the same kind of values, and just worked out that way. Mm-hmm. And whoever we could meet sitting on bleachers at the boys' games and stuff, that was always the best entree to meeting people and all. So mm-hmm. it was good. We had, you know, we had some hard times too, and we didn't, but. I don't know what secrets there are because it's such a personal thing, but it was a good time.
So do you mind me asking when your husband passed away?
December 2011. It was about December 15th. I think that was the date, 2011. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how would you say his legacy still lives on?
Oh, my goodness. And his grandchildren, they have very specific memories about Grandpa. They would all come home, the kids in Evanston or my Texas grandkids. Charlie would always, you know, he'd take them to the playground, a couple of schools nearby, take them for always ice cream before dinner, mm-hmm. always.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that was something I'm sure they'll remember. But, and he would sit down and have them spell words and talk about the meaning of words. And I mean, just things like that. And he'd listen, you know, he was fun. And I guess his integrity, I'm sure they'll remember, and his sense of humor, and that he wasn't afraid to love them mm-hmm. and spend time with them. And they were a gift mm-hmm. to him, really.
Yeah.
Really. It brought out the best in him, being a grandparent, I think.
Oh, yeah. And he has a grandson named after him with Charlie.
Yeah. That was a very big deal.
I bet.
It was. Charlie 3, as we call him. Because Charlie was a junior. And so little Charlie, as he's not. He was Charlie. We call him Charlie 3.
Charlie 3.
Instead of saying little Charlie, because, you know, that's that's not the case anymore.
Yeah. So you said that you went to nursing school, right? Or you were a nurse. Uh-huh. So where did you go to nursing school at and when?
Middletown State, a hospital in Middletown. My mother wanted me to go to New York City and go to, I can't remember. It was a very, very well-known college, and they had a nursing program. And she forgave me. I mean, I wanted to be home when Charlie came home on leave. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't want to be in another place. And she, you know, that was very big of her to not, for it really, you know, pushed me to do something I didn't want to do. Yeah. So I'm glad I stayed there. It was a good experience. And we still communicate, my classmates and I.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah, we share a lot of funny stuff.
You were a nurse throughout the 60s then. What was that like? Do you have any particular stories from being a nurse?
I worked, when we moved to Albany, New York, and I worked at the Veterans Hospital there. That was my first job. And they offered me a job at Albany Medical Center, which was the biggest hospital and in the area, and a very good one. But I could make more money at the VA, so that's where I went. And because Chuck was still in school, and he tutored and painted houses in the summer to earn extra money and stuff. So, you know, it was a good experience. And I worked psych mostly. I wanted to work med-surg, but you go where you were needed. And mm-hmm. I worked on psych. And I guess I grew to love it. It was mostly World War II veterans.
Yeah.
And they were some Korean. Mm-hmm. Vietnam had just started up, so there weren't any young men in there. But mostly, mostly people who were schizophrenic, older. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have acutely psychotic people, just sometimes. That stood out in my memory, because if you had a patient that was labeled acutely psychotic, being assaultive or suicidal, or what was the other one? An escapee. That would be E, because they like to run away.
Yeah,
and you had to have one aide with that person at all times. So it was a lot of time management and stuff. But I just loved them. I really did. The way that their memories, and just listen. you know, because they were older and some younger and whatever. But it was a good experience, but it was hard for me to manage the nursing assistants because they were all got men mostly. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were, who were older than I and had worked there a long time. And here I'm this, you know, just barely 21-year-old, you know, young woman having to, you know, be in charge of them. And that was a good learning experience. Yeah. It really was. Yeah. I never want to be a manager of anything. That's really? What I just said. Nursing was fine. Anyway, why do tears keep coming? I'm not sure why. Anyway, no, but it was good. And I worked there for 4 years and really good people. My favorite person was my head nurse, Dorothy Damiano. And she was so Italian. And she was tough. She looked like a little sergeant, and she was. And she only liked nurses that were new if they'd been through a 3-year program, not a 2-year program. Oh. And so I fortunately had been through a 3-year hospital program. Anyway, and she always called me Gruner. And she always spelled it with 2 N's, no matter what. And she was great, but I loved her. She really liked me, and she really liked Charlie. And I gave her a recipe for Irish soda bread one time, and she made it. She said, I think you left something out. It wasn't very good. I said, I didn't leave anything out. It's your Italian. So, you know, live with it. So anyway, and she laughed, but it was a good experience. It was, and then I went back after Kurt was, you know, a few months old, a year. He was a year. I went back and then I got pregnant for Chris. I worked part-time after Kurt was born.
Yeah. So you have 2 boys, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And how old were you when you had your oldest?
I have to get the year. Okay, he was born in 67. I was 24.
Okay.
And I thought that was old.
Really?
Well, I mean, you know, so many people who got out of nursing school or college or whatever, they had already had their family. But, you know, we waited a while. So, and then I was 26 when Chris was born.
Okay. What lesson did you stress the most to your kids when they were growing up?
I wonder what they would tell you. Really? I really wonder. I think maybe the way we tried to live exemplified what we needed to tell them. I guess be honest, and I know I remember that. And then don't be afraid to tell me the truth, you know, and behave about, you know, accepting whatever it was. Sometimes I didn't. Chris has memories of me stomping up the stairs to have a discussion with him. And I was like, forget that. Would you please? I'm so embarrassed. I wish I could climb the stairs that fast now. But anyway, no. Oh, gosh. No, I always felt so grateful, Lexi, for Charlie, that he was their dad, because he was such a good dad. Mm-hmm. You know, he really was. He traveled a lot, but they never felt like he was gone. They always felt like he was around, you know, and they probably, why did you leave me with her? So anyway, but no, it was...
What would you say is the most rewarding part about being a parent?
Oh, I was always so proud of what we accomplished, that we had these 2 children. I mean, just pride, really. Being able to love somebody that grew inside you, and you were born, and, you know, you shared with this man. And I guess it was such a good experience to love them so much. I hope they knew it. You know? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah. What parenting advice would you give to a young parent right now?
Right now, I would have them read Irma Bombeck. She was a wonderful humorist when we were young, young couples and all. And she wrote the best stuff. And she wrote a column. I think she wrote it after she had a cancer diagnosis. I'm not positive. Mm-hmm. But look up online.
Okay.
I took pictures of it, but not good pictures. It was hard for me to find on Google. But, you know, she said, if I had it to do over, if I had my life to live over, one of the first things she said was, I would take the rose-colored wax candle out of storage, this I'm paraphrasing, and burn it and not keep it for some occasion. And then she would say, I'd use this good silver for dinner. I'd use the good dishes. And she there were other things in there, and they were sweet and funny a little bit too, but I always remember the wax rose, because we probably all had one that we saved for company or something, and then it gets lost. But I would have everybody I knew, that if they were young, read that.
And what would the Joan of today tell herself as a young wife and mother? What would you tell yourself now?
Oh, be nicer to yourself, Joan. Really, be nicer. Don't try so hard. Just be easy with what comes to you. And I just tried to be the best mother and the best. Oh, I love to cook. I like to make things and bake cookies mostly. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I work too hard at it. And you don't have to. If I could go back, I would be so much easier on myself. And that would have made me a better person, I think. That's a biggie.
How many grandkids do you have?
Five.
Five? And what are their names?
Oh, let's see. In Texas, there is Emily. Emily and the three girls and the two twins are the same age. They were kind of born a few months apart. And then there's Annabelle is in Texas. She's 2 years younger than Emily. She and Charlie are the same age.
Okay.
And there's so many wonderful pictures of them all together when they were little. And Charlie's always looking at her like, what? I mean, even when he was like two. You know, I can remember one, he's got his finger in his mouth and she's talking or saying, doing it, and he's just, And so but there's so many pictures like there where he's kind of sitting on the top bunk bed, the two of them looking at her and like, what? I mean, it just stays with me. So it was fun that there were three of them that were the same age, and then the other two were the same age. And so it worked out well. I just wish they didn't have to be apart. You know, that was hard.
Yeah.
Moving away.
How often were they all together, would you say?
Oh, well, when they were really young, maybe up until three or four, they didn't live that far apart. They both lived in Illinois.
Okay.
Evanston and then up in Barrington, I think. And so we did get together more. For holidays and things. So that was good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Easter and Thanksgiving. And I'd see them at Christmas. And yeah. So they really got to know each other when they were, you know, little. So they mm-hmm. do have that, but not as much when they, you know, they got older.
Yeah. What's your favorite part about being a grandma?
Oh gosh. That I can do whatever I want with them. I can spoil them. That's the best. Yeah. Everybody says, you know, everybody tells you it's God's gift that you had children, not for them, but that you get grandchildren. So I think it's just watching them is just, it is such a gift because they're smart and funny and they try so hard to please, you know, they do. Well, mm-hmm. mine did, all of them, and do nice things. And I saved that's why it was so hard moving. I saved everything they ever did as far as art, you know, their artwork and all that.
Yeah.
And the downsizer I had said, you know, Joan, you might don't have enough wall space for all these things, but whatever you want to do, you know, so, okay. But anyway, I saved a lot of stuff in case they needed it or wanted to look at it. Yeah. So that's the best. And sharing, seeing how some traits that we have got passed down to them, you know, just their humor and things like that. I think that was a big gift. It's just the chance to love some people so much. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I think this is not possible, but it is. So.
How old were you when you had your first grandchild?
Probably 43, I think.
Yeah. And do you remember, like, how you felt when you found out you were going to be a grandma?
Or was I 53? No. Must have been after because they were married. No. Well, ask me that question.
Oh, you're okay. But do you remember how you felt when you found out you were going to be a grandma?
Oh, yeah. I remember Chris and Erica, they were the first to tell us, you know, and I remember sitting in their house and they said it was going to be, and they told us it was going to be twins. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Yes, it was so exciting. Oh, so exciting. And they were so proud, you know, they were just silly proud and excited. And so, we always loved visiting with either couple and especially when they were going to have babies. And then Jill and Kurt got pregnant a few months afterwards because Emily was born in August and the girls were born in May. Yeah. So we had a lot of babies. And friends gave me a grandma shower, stuff to have in the house, you know, books and all kinds of stuff because there were three all at once.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much. So it's a good time.
Yeah. So you have moved around a lot throughout your life. Where all have you lived?
Let's see. Well, I got married in Middletown and moved to Albany, New York right away because I was starting work and Chuck was finishing school. And then we moved to a house in Delmar, New York, which was outside of Albany. That was our first home. From there, we moved to Downers Grove, Illinois. Kurt was probably four and Chris was two, I think. And from Downers Grove, we moved to Lenox, Massachusetts. Chuck was with GE, and we were transferred there. So at least we got back east, and I was happy about that. Mm-hmm. And then we moved from Lenox. We were at Lenox almost 7 years, and then we moved to Danbury, Connecticut for about 2.5. And then we moved here, again, with Chuck's job. That's why we moved. So
okay.
It was all good. And I mean, I had to be pulled, you know, pulled away from every place you move, because we were blessed to have really good friends. And, but I didn't want to cry a lot because I didn't want the boys to think it was the end of their lives, you know, but it's hard to move when you're in high school, eighth grade in high school, that move, that was difficult. And they were real troopers about it, but we moved with other people who'd worked for UniRoyal at the same time when their kids were starting school. So we really had a base that we could relate to right away. So that was helpful.
Oh yeah. Where would you say is the favorite place that you've lived?
Probably Lenox, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And why
you could open the door and let them out. And it was a cul-de-sac, and we were all friends. And we moved there because we didn't want to be, you know, in Pittsfield, Mass, where the main of the plastics division of GE was, because it would be a company town. So we moved to Lenox, little town next door, and on this street, it was all new houses, and everybody worked for GE. So mm-hmm. we didn't manage, but it was all great.
Yeah.
And I think the boys loved it a lot. Aww. They really did. They're good friends.
Yeah. And what has moving around so much taught you?
That you can have friends anywhere. It's just, and you hate to leave them, but I'm so grateful to have had them and the experiences that you share with them. That's the very best thing. Mm-hmm. Really is, has been. It is hard to move, but I realize it can be done. And you know, it's easier when you have children, because you do get to meet people that are, you know, so much like you and whatever. So it wasn't easy, but it was good. And I look back on it now. I said, how did I ever do that? You know, you have other responsibilities, but I think this move was a nightmare. Only because I had so much to do. But I don't know.
So did both of your boys play sports?
Oh, yes. Spent a lot of time on bleachers.
Yeah. Was it football or did they play anything else?
They played Little League baseball. They both played soccer in, you know, grade school and coming up. They played soccer. They both wrestled in high school, played football in high school, and let's see, in the spring, Kurt played soccer. Chris was cross country, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he shot put. Does that go with cross country?
All right,
because that's what he did.
Track.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
No, yeah, you're fine. And I know that Chris played at DePaul, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Where did Kurt go?
He went to IU Bloomington.
Oh, okay.
And he didn't go out for a sport there.
But they both stayed in Indiana, though.
Yeah, that's, they did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any good memories from watching them playing sports or anything like that?
Oh, we made some really good friends watching them play sports. And, of course, you're on the edge, always on the edge of your seat when, you know, they're in a critical move, you know, down the hockey rink. Kurt played hockey in high school. Mm-hmm. Hockey or whatever it is. They never had to be goalies. I thought that had to be the hardest thing as a parent, to be able to watch your kid be goalie.
Yeah.
But no, it was always exciting. And it was wrenching too, you know, when they lose a big game and, you know, there's so many feelings and all. But we all benefited from them being in sports.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chris playing at DePaul was such a big deal. And his coach, who just passed away, Coach Morosis.
Oh, yeah.
It was just, oh, God, it's such a loss. But he was just the greatest influence in Chris's life, other than his dad.
Mm-hmm.
Chris always says that he was such a good man.
Yeah.
And he never swore.
Really?
He had a little language that he used when he was really mad, I guess. I don't know. But he's just such a kind, good man. He really was. So we were lucky. Mm-hmm. And that's that. So I don't have any specific memories, just the whole experience of going to a game that your kid is playing and was always awesome. Mm-hmm. And then we'd always get pizza or dinner after that was good too.
Yeah, yeah. So when you finally ended up in Indiana, you got your master's, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what went into the decision to go and do that?
I always wanted to, I think, be an English major. And I thought, I'm going to be an English major finally. And I took, I think the program was called Liberal Studies. And so I got to take lots of literature and history and all kinds of stuff like that. And it was great. And I decided that because the boys were gone and they had started college or were well into college. And I really thought, this is my chance to do that. So I really enjoyed it. Really, I went to IUSB in Indiana University, South Bend, and finished. But I didn't take, I all my credits were in, and then the girls were going to be born, and I knew I could not put myself through be a grandma to these babies, or, you know, do whatever the last project is when you get your master's. So, but anyway, I did finish, so it was good. It was good to do. I loved it. I really did. Mm-hmm. And I took French, and it almost killed me. Really? Because you had to take it like, yeah, really? Oh, it really did. I'm not kidding.
It was. You should have called up your friend from boarding school. Maybe she would have helped you.
I should have, Josette. Yes, I should have. Oh, my gosh. Right. Thank you for remembering that. Yeah. I'm sure I thought of her every now and then. I'm sure that I did. You know, but nice to have somebody to talk to.
Mm-hmm. Well, you talked about your Irish heritage. What are, like, your favorite songs that remind you of Ireland? Or do you have any, like, specific quotes or anything?
My Wild Irish Rose, It's a Long Way to Tipperary, McNamara's Band, and Danny Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Danny Boy was my mother's favorite.
Really?
Love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you ever get a chance to watch Yankee Doodle Dandy, it's an old movie with Jimmy Cagney, and it's about the life of George M. Cohan, you know, the composer. And it's a wonderful movie. It's just the best. It's just, you know, there are a lot of love stories and all that from Ireland and the Quiet Man and all that. But Jimmy Cagney is super. Keep it in mind.
Okay, yeah, I will. Do you have any particular quotes that you like to say?
No. No, if somebody asked me, I guess I would go in my book and find a line of poetry that I know. I loved Yeats, William Butler Yeats' poetry, and I have a tremor, it's shaky. I had a verse from one of his poems late in life, and we had it put on the tile in the bathroom. An artist did the tile and did the verse. It's, I will arise and go now, for always night and day, I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore. And as I stand on pavement gray, I hear it in my deep heart's core. And we love that poem. And the kids each had a verse from that poem to say at Chuck's funeral. You know, and it was just special because those are the poems he wrote. He knew it was near the end of his life. And they were beautiful. They weren't, you know, overwhelmingly sad or anything.
But yeah.
No, that was my favorite.
Oh, that's awesome. As you look back on your life, who are the people who have impacted or influenced you the most?
My parents, definitely, and my Aunt Rita. And I'm trying to think. I thought about a lot of the teachers that I had. And I guess, really, I just have to say family. I had a lot of wonderful teachers along the way. Who I can still remember. So if I remember them and how they looked, no, that means that they were influential in my life, or I would have forgotten them. I could name them all because I thought it was wonderful to be a teacher. That's when teachers used to dress up when they taught. You know, it was just, that was special. And I'm trying to think in college. I had some wonderful professors at IUSB, and they were all feminists, but they weren't annoyingly feminists. Mm-hmm. But they were really... you know, it was like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the way they conducted their lives and what it meant to be a woman and all. I think made a huge impression on me, even though I was an adult, you know.
Mm-hmm. So. What kinds of things would they say that you got that, or just like their whole presence?
It's their whole presence. And then the courses that I took, there were a lot of, you know, women in literature and stuff. So, and their enthusiasm for that. And one... her name, Dr. Kaufman. She was an art feminist, you would have to say. And she taught Shakespeare. I took Shakespeare from her. And she emphasized the female parts in Shakespeare, his plays and all. And not to leaving the men out or anything, but she emphasized the characters and how well he described them. And I remember one day we had to raise our hands and say something about the character. And I said, I think she had a very fine, she called me Mrs. Gruner. And I said, I think she had made a very foxy decision. She looked at me and she said, foxy, Mrs. Gruner, is that the word you want to use? Oh, probably not. Anyway, I thought, she was cunning. How's that?
Okay.
Much better. Okay. But I was scared to death of her. But I was impressed by her, too.
Yeah,
you know, and
yeah.
To get a good grade from her meant a lot.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Really did. Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. What would you say is your favorite memory or, like, time period of your life?
Okay. I thought about that too. You know, I guess dividing up in periods as to where we lived, I love them all. I would never not want to go back to that time. Never felt that way. I think Lenox, because we were neighbors and good friends. It was really a really special time, really special. And, you know, we'd have picnics together. It was like a little enclave. And the kids, I think the boys still feel that that probably was their favorite place to be, you know. And we're still connected with those people. Yeah. So it's kind of nice.
Do you regret anything throughout your life?
You know what? The Frank Sinatra song comes into my head this minute. You know, regrets, I have a few, but too few to mention. I lived my life in full, so I threw without distinction. It's a beautiful song. If you've not heard it, listen to it, about him singing it. I don't have any huge regrets. I really don't. I wish I could have. I really couldn't believe that Charlie was going to die. I knew it. I wasn't in denial totally, but I know part of me, this was not really going to happen. And I regret that there were more little things I could have done or would have done if I had known we had, you know, just not that many moments. But no, I don't think so. I don't have a lot of regrets. I don't.
What advice would you give to my generation?
Gosh, you're going to be amazing. Fix things. I don't know. I expect you to do it, but oh my goodness. I think lately it has occurred to me that it's possible for all of us to have friendships with people that are very different than me. And I think of Ginsburg and Scalia, the two judges on the court. They were politically at the other ends of the universe from each other, but they were best friends and they respected each other and each other's opinions. And they would laugh or not laugh at, you know, when they would be alone. And they were such good friends. And I think that's a huge piece of try to look at life that way, if you can, you know, still maintain that political things, maybe religious things, work things, they're important, but not as important as your friendship. If you can just, you know, care for each other, whoever you are, in neighborhoods or whatever, just try to be like Scalia and Ginsburg. That's what I would advise. Because that really, with her passing and the summarization of their lives together on the court just made me realize how important that is. And that's what I would say to shoot for.
Yeah. What do you believe is the most important thing in life?
Family. Loving your kids and being grateful. I'm grateful a lot. Family, definitely. Because, I mean, I saw that growing up. That you just took care of each other. And what it meant to be sisters. And I was the only one. In fact, Erica and Chris gave me a painting that they, at Christmas time. And it's all these redheaded ladies standing at a table. And a couple are sitting, those are standing. And they're very different looking. But she said that the painting reminded her of my mother and her sisters. Because they were, you know, she realized, she didn't know, she only knew my mom just a little bit. And but me talking about them and how they cared for each other I really saw, you know, a lot of that about loyalty and being a loving person and being burdened by a lot of hardships too and coming out of it. And that's it.
What do you hope to be remembered by?
Oh, let's see. The one person that really, well, there are a couple of other grandparents that I adored my grandchildren. And my husband and that, boy, I wish I could tell you something profound, Lexi. I just hope they remember me well, you know, and made good cookies. And that's funny. The last time I made Neapolitans for Christmas, I just share this memory with you because it's so, they're these little layered cookies that are green and pink and yellow, like they're like a tiny little sliver of cake. You cut them up. They're devils to make because you have to cut precisely and all this. And I made a big batch, brought over to Evanston for those kids and mailed some to Texas. And anyway, Chris said, oh, here, I'll put them on the porch because, you know, there's so much stuff in the fridge and everything. That's fine. Put them on the deck. And About a half hour later, I heard Erica scream. I mean, really yell. And I thought, God, what's happened? Damn squirrel. She said the squirrel had chewed through the heavy duty plastic on the cookie box. And he only got the top layer because I thought, I'm rescuing this bottom layer. He's only chewed on the top layer. Yeah. I couldn't bear to throw him out because they were so much work.
Yeah.
That's just, but and maybe, okay, remember the Neapolitans that Grandma made at Christmas. How's that?
That's good.
So anyway, and Chris apologized. I'm so sorry, Mom. I said, it's okay. You did not plan to have the squirrel eat through the plastic. No. No. Anyway, Erica hates squirrels.
Oh, really?
And chipmunks, yeah.
Yeah.
So how are we doing?
I think we're good. You did a great job.
Thanks. You did a great job.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're so easy to be with.
Oh, well, thank you so much for doing this, though.
I just hope this helped you. You know, yes. I'm sure you could find a lot of amazing characters.
No, this is perfect.
To do, but I'm happy to do it for you. It's kind of fun to remember.
Joan Gruner, full of light, laughter, and knowledge. Valuing friendship no matter who or where, and keeping her family as the most important thing in her life. She really is such a nice Irish girl, as her mother would say. Through each of her various life experiences, Joan emulates Frank Sinatra's famous lyrics, for she always was sure to do it her way, often with love in her heart, cookies in the oven, and a smile on her face.
Get up very early because the dog wakes me up now at 5. He's very cute. He's laying over there on his back. I'll walk over and show you. He's very cute. He's a terrier, wire-haired dachshund mix, and he's very charming. I give him the run of the place, and he wakes me up at 5, wagging his tail. And so I know I have to go when I wake up, so I make sure I get him out at 5. So my day starts at 5 a.m.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I know. Go on for people, make sure. But people, there's no more people to talk to. You've got to go online. So that's, I waste a lot of time that way. And Erica always helped me a lot. But I think she ran out of patience finally. Oh, God, Joan's calling. Anyway, she was so helpful no matter what. Anyway, she's a very good daughter-in-law. So
you've mentioned your dog. How many dogs have you had throughout your life?
Oh, I had one collie when I was young, Sandy, because Lassie was the favorite show on TV.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a contest. That isn't how I got, but you send in the names for 5 puppies, and somebody would win, you know, 5 people would win a puppy.
Yeah.
Well, I had really ingenious names like Star, Twinkle. I mean, I can remember it was the most inane list. I didn't win a puppy, but I guess my parents thought I was serious about it. They got me a collie puppy, and she was sweet. So I met her, and then we had 3 dachshunds, Schultzy, Buddy, and... No, but maybe just 2. Schultz and Buddy, yeah. And that's why I was looking for another dachshund. But when I looked at the rescue sites, I saw his face. And I think I gotta go look at him. So, he was so cute. He is cute.
Okay. Yes, hopefully I can meet you in person sometime.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah,
we'll work on that. Really, I'd love it.
Yeah.
I'll get you dinner.
Oh, I'd love that.
All right.
All right, well, have a great rest of your day. Nice meeting you.
You too, hon.
Thank you.
Bye, Lexi.
Bye.